to Idle Red Hands Weekly. I'm Jeremy.
I'm Chris.
And what is Idle Red Hands Weekly? It is a national holiday celebrated on various dates in the United States, Canada, some of the Caribbean islands, and Liberia. It began as a day of giving thanks and sacrifice for the blessing of the harvest. Similarly named festival holidays occur in Germany and Japan. Although Thanksgiving has historical roots in religious and cultural traditions, it has long been celebrated as a secular holiday. Happy Thanksgiving.
Yeah, I completely forgot.
Right. I did see televised, they had the Thanksgiving ceremony, Japanese ceremony with the new emperor.
Oh, so right. Okay. Yeah, that was on TV this morning. Yeah.
Right. But it's funny, they've adopted Black Friday here.
So and Cyber
Black
Monday.
Black Friday sales, and they don't even have any idea. They just like that it's a foreign word, a foreign thing. And they do that in other places, so let's do it here.
it's kind of weird, especially when you see the mannequins dressed up all in like black clothes and stuff, because that's what Black Friday is. Right.
Something that I read just recently that was interesting and a little bit showing kind of the excesses of the streaming competition that's happening now is New Republic Pictures. So that's Brian Oliver and producer Bradley J. Fisher acquired exclusive rights to all the works of Michael Moorcock. So his work is the Elric. So Elric of Melniboné. And so they're beginning to shop that around for production. And so it's funny because already Netflix has a Witcher series in production.
Okay.
And Witcher is very obviously inspired by that character. So are you familiar with
I
the character at all?
I am not.
So originally it was written in the 60s by Michael Moorcock as intended to be just a one-shot story and to be an anti-Conan
I am already
character.
Disinterested.
Yes, right. Yeah, and the reason I never really got into the character either is because it got really psychedelic. Like he dropped a lot of acid, but the
writer or the character?
The writer. Okay. So he wrote those trips gave him the idea of the multiverse. So he was kind of one of the early in fiction, the early kind of originators. And I think he coined that term multiverse that then, you know, Marvel and DC kind of picked up on. The connection, you can see this inspiration and it obviously inspired a lot of British, you know, fantasy illustrators and then fantasy game settings because it's the kind of the first dark fantasy character setting, and it had a lot of heavy metal inspiration. I think the first book was actually dedicated to Lemmy from Motorhead.
Right. Okay.
so he had a kind of connection to metal music, and also this coming up with a opposite of what the sword and sorcery tradition had already been, something darker and more of an anti-hero. So they're shopping that around, but it's got a lot of similarities to other things, and I'm curious how well they're actually going to be able to produce it, because even comics have trouble kind of portraying visually what happens in these stories.
Oh, really? Interesting. Yeah. Oh, okay.
So we will see. But I thought that was interesting and also shows that people think that there's a lot of venues now because the streaming competition is picking up. So original properties are getting licensed and they're trying to push them out. But I'd be curious to see. And I wonder if there's an RPG setting for that world.
Bet you there's one for GURPS.
And I think it's inspired so many settings that it's kind of one of those things where if you go back to the original, it feels like a cliche because it's the originator of so many of those ideas. Oh, so something that just arrived, I got the English version of the art book of Viasen. So the Free League horror investigator Norse mythology stories. So the book arrived. So I ordered it from a Swedish online bookseller, Bokus. The shipping was pretty decent.
Oh, nice.
And then I discovered that on the Kickstarter, it's an add-on.
Yeah.
So I could have saved that shipping. But it's nice to have it early because it's not going to be fulfilled until next year. It's beautiful. The quality of the book
looks really nice. Yeah.
And so it's a cloth-wrapped book with gold embossing and the titles and things. So if they stick with that same style and the look for this, for the RPG setting book, it will be really nice. They did a similar thing with Tales from the Loop. So the layout and typography of the original Tales from the Loop art book is reflected in that RPG book. And so I hope they continue that. So the limited version is going to be a cloth-covered book hopefully looks very similar to that.
I have not looked at the Kickstarter because I can't spend any more money.
You are kick-halted at this
time. Yes, yes. My Alien RPG book arrived.
Oh, nice. Oh, good.
At my folks' place back in the States.
Ah, so
They held it up today in front of Skype. And I'm like, really wish I had spent a little bit more on shipping to have it delivered to Japan. So I'm going to have to settle for the PDF that I have until I get a chance to visit them again.
Right. So what was their opinion of the system? Did they like the setting? Nice. Well, that's good that it came. Yeah, some people are getting worried because they haven't gotten tracking or anything.
Oh, okay.
But so that's good. That's good that your book showed up. Did you get notification, like an email?
I did not.
Oh,
I did not. And I had to go back and check my email receipt about where I had actually sent it.
Okay.
But that's on me because I forgot.
On last week's weekly, I described our weekend, the session that you ran with John of the Trophy RPG, and I think kind of unsuccessfully.
Unsuccessfully, oh really?
I don't think I convinced Lyle, because he kind of asked me about it out of nowhere, and I'm like, oh yeah, I was drinking. Wait a minute. What did we, you know, so I was kind of like hazily recounting.
I think most of the time you discussed whether or not your characters would keep going. And I said, it's okay if you like your characters just like leave the fort, but understand that'll be the end of the game.
Right, right. But you played in another session for the Jig RPG.
Yes, yes. Last week. It wasn't the same incursion. And the incursion I ran for our group was called the Spiral. Mm-hmm. And it was an urban encounter, which I thought maybe made it more difficult to run and play in. This was, I think, a runner-up for the Trophy Incursion Writing Contest.
Oh, nice.
And this one was called A Warm and Pleasant Hum. Can you guess what the theme was?
Bees?
Yes, bees. In fact, bees. Yeah, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, which I had looked at a bunch of the submissions, only like the first paragraph and the theme, mm-hmm. and I thought, ah, bees, that's kind of a little bit silly, mm-hmm. especially because I thought the theme for most trophy incursions should be a bit more abstract, like mm-hmm. vertigo or gravity or whatever. Right, this is right. Very concrete, bees, right? Wow. But by the end of the game, which was about 3.5 hours and we had 3 players, I was like, oh God, bees, right? Bees are horrific. Yeah.
And so you're just basically Nicolas Cage from The Wicker Man the whole time?
Which I've never seen. So I think maybe that's why it worked, right?
Right.
So,
right. Yeah.
It was more, I guess, a more traditional incursion in that your characters were going into the forest specifically to try and recover some kind of treasure.
Covered in bees.
In this case, it was like super rare, like elixir of life, royal jelly stuff.
Ah, nice. Oh, that's cool. Yeah, that's a cool concept. Yeah. And yeah. Were the bees monstrous bees? Or just
not at first. Okay. Not at first. First, I'm not going to spoil stuff, but I think you could replay incursions. But that game not taught me, but solidified why I think you play with an X card, because some kind of like horrific stuff happened, mostly sparked by me and my character, who after a snap decision, I decided, okay, my character is just like a psychopath pretty much, mm-hmm. where like using that bind ritual to hold someone in place that's being affected by like bee venom and all this stuff. And then I said, my character is going to casually examine this person who is obviously in pain, but bound by my spell. I'm like, wow, okay, my character is absolutely horrible. And I just leaned into it for the rest of the game. Mm-hmm. But I made a point to explain to the other players out of character what my character intended to do before they did it. Mm-hmm. Because I wanted to give the other players and the GM a chance to say, nope, that's too much. Mm-hmm. Or even sometimes I said, unless someone else in the game stops my character, this is what she's intending to do. Mm-hmm. So there was some PvP, which you're going to get in a trophy game, I think, but we resolved it with stuff. But I think rather than just springing it on people, even when the X card or other safety tools are in play, everyone's there to have a good time. And so I think saying, hey, here's what I intend for my character to do. Anyone have a problem with that or want to tone it back is something you should do. Mm-hmm. Even if you're playing with people you kind of know.
Mm. Was this a group that you'd played Trophy with before? Or?
I'd played Trophy with the GM before, mm-hmm. and I had played with one of the other players before, not Trophy. And the third person I was playing with was new.
Oh, okay. Yeah, so in Trophy, it is a GM. I was kind of stuck on that.
It is a GM.
I was stuck on that last week. It's like, it's got to be called something different, right?
I think it's called a GM. Yeah. Or they say that you need one person to like facilitate the game, yeah.
Can you quickly just talk about the system? I don't think I did a fair sure. job of talking
it's
about it.
It's a really minimal system, a D6 die pool. Basically, on a roll of a 6, you get everything you want. It's a complete success. Mm-hmm. 4 to 5 is a success with complication, and a 1 to 3 your action fails. You collect a light colored die if you're skilled in what you're doing, if you accept like a devil's bargain, and you take a dark colored die if you're willing to risk your body or mind or if you're performing a ritual. Usually the dice pool is around like 1 to 3 dice of these two colors, mm-hmm. and you just take the highest die and that determines whether you get that full success, mixed success, or something fails. Mm-hmm. I guess one of the key points is whenever you take an action that's risky, you ask the table, what could go wrong? Mm-hmm. Which feeds the GM information and gives them something to go on if you do then fail that roll. Mm-hmm. The other important thing is those dark dice, if you roll higher than your current ruin score, mm-hmm. your ruin score goes up and bad things happen to your character. And once your character hits 6 ruin, they're out of the story. They're kind of like hit points, kind of like corruption, mm-hmm. kind of like fatigue and stuff like that. In that trophy game about the bees, something that happened, my character got an unnatural compulsion for sweet things, which then led to a very horrific.
Oh, that's character. Cool. Yeah, yeah. You kind of
win. Oh, she also had to dance whenever she gave instructions as well. An unnatural compulsion to do that. So, yeah.
Oh, cool.
So the conditions you get when your ruin track goes up are linked to whatever incursion you are playing. So they're all different. There's not a generic list. They're there to reinforce whatever theme that incursion is about. Mm-hmm. Like the game we played, your character got those vertical slitted eyes, mm-hmm. and John's character started feeling cold. It was snake eyes, and you are now cold-blooded because the theme of our incursion was serpents.
Right, right. Well, that's cool. Something that I was working on kind of game-related. This week it's kind of teaching and game-related. So I've got a kind of a workshop group that I help with the ACEN test. So it's all kind of high school, junior high school age kids. And some of them are going homestay, study abroad. And so I put together a very simple, it's kind of D20 based, but a very simple like American high school. And so basically we're going to play a day of American high school, and it's just going to be physical, mental, emotional contests against each other. So, you know, trying to stay awake in class, trying to solve problems at the board. I'm just going to kind of reduce it to all the, you know, kind of cliches and stuff. But I really want them to, you know, practice kind of classroom conversation and like how you would ask for something and how a teacher may react to certain things. So I don't know if they're going to get into the spirit of it and actually not play themselves. I think they might just end up playing themselves as like, you know, Japanese exchange students.
Would that
students.
Be a problem though?
No, I think it'll work fine. And that will actually give them more maybe appropriate, you know, kind of conversation cues and stuff. But just thought instead of just doing, because, you know, so much in ESL classes, you know, English as second language classes, is role play.
And
so why not play a role play game where you have to say something, but you also get to roll dice to find out how successful that was.
I really like that. And the sheets you showed me were really, really cute.
Okay.
I think they might play themselves. Mm-hmm. Then you might run into the sticky point of, okay, what score do I give myself in these things? So maybe just show up with kind of like quasi-pregens, numbers already filled in. So you don't have to worry about filling them in. You don't have to worry about rating yourself. Just here's some characters, play these. And that would be, I think that'd be pretty fun.
Yeah, yeah. So inspired by the Wendy's knockoff. Oh,
is that what it is? No, I didn't see Unleash the Feast on your little character sheet there anywhere.
It's all branded as English learning. Yeah. So, it should be fun. So, and I don't think any of them are familiar with tabletop role-playing. So it'd be funny to see their reaction, just like when I kind of foisted it on my daughter.
What is this?
That brought up a topic that I think might be an interesting, it's probably not going to make it to YouTube because I don't want to talk about anything related to kids on YouTube. But when do you introduce tabletop role playing? Because we've all got young kids, and like, when is a good time to get them interested? I think there have been some people online that have talked about, introducing tabletop role playing to kids at young ages in real reduced, simplified ways to kind of, so they get the basic concepts and have fun in that world. So what do you think? Is it something you should just kind of wait for them, their peer group, to introduce, or is it something that might be fun as a family?
I don't know. I think it depends on the other players in the game for the family. Because recently, because I have a lot of Lego, I gave my daughter, who's just over 2.5, she got into my Lego and I gave her those little minifigs. Mm-hmm. And her fine motor skills are to the point where she can take them apart and put them together, not put anything in their hands, but kind of like swap their hair around. And she hasn't really started playing out scenarios, but I can see she understands these are replicas of people and they're kind of doing people things, mm-hmm. like they're riding horses, they're, you know, kind of walking around. So I think once kids get to that age of, oh, we're going to play act with these little characters, mm-hmm. I think you could kind of start introducing role playing, like real simple, just kind of like, oh, what are you doing? Because role playing is essentially just playing make believe.
Right.
I think I've noticed that my kid is real stubborn, and if the correct hair or legs don't go on the person, you're like, no, you're doing it wrong. So
I wonder where she got that. I don't know.
Not
anybody.
Me. But I think introducing dice and kind of like a pass fail thing that would come around the same time as you would be able to play a board game with a kid, mm-hmm. and have them understand that they can't always sort of win or get what they want. Even if it was something real simple like, oh, just roll this die, and on a 1-3, I get to narrate what happens, and a 4-6, you get to narrate what happens, something like that.
Right, right. Nice.
I think you could do it, yeah.
Yeah, I think that would be interesting. It would make an interesting podcast topic, because if we have older listeners, they're probably thinking about that. Tell your kids about it before their friends give them that weird version. So for this simplified RPG, I was looking at people that were recommending systems for playing kind of high school scenarios. And of course, Monster Hearts comes up very first. And then there's a simple RPG or just kind of a one page that's a Click.
Okay.
Then there are some other kind of high school based things, but they all revolve around more social cliches and, you know, are you a stoner or a goth or a jock? And I wanted to, that'd be too hard to explain, I think, in this kind of situation. But I did notice there is a bundle of holding that had another system that was recommended, which was Bubble Gumshoe.
Oh, really? Okay. Yep.
Yeah, people talked about that being kind of like teenage detective stuff. So, yep. So Gumshoe is a system, Evil Hat system, that they've, I guess you can play almost Cthulhu or any kind of like mystery solving with it. But that bundle is a lot of amazing. So it's basically Bundle of Holdings Indie Cornucopia 7. So it's something they do every year, just kind of pick the greatest hits of independent, small press, produced tabletop RPGs. And they're a bit more expensive than Humble Bundles.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Because so you get a discount of just buying the PDFs, but it's not a dollar for, big, because it's things that are currently in print and by small companies.
Right.
So it's not just the big guys kind of throwing out digital copies of things to hope to
that they don't want anymore. Yeah.
Their systems. So the original collection, and I'm just curious if you have any opinions or familiarity with any of the systems. So the starter collection is Five Torches Deep, Sigmata, and Bubblegum Shoe. And that's $12.95, just kind of a flat starter collection. And then they have kind of a threshold price, and it's a varying price for the bonus collection. So currently it's at $25.70 US, so $25.70 US, and that's additional titles, but as more people order it, it goes up. So the earlier you get in on it, the better the price is. And in the bonus collection is Blades in the Dark, Kids on Bikes, A Las Vegas, and Imp of the Perverse.
I have a copy of Bubblegum Shoe, and I have a copy of Blades in the Dark. I think the way Gumshoe works is your skills are pretty low, or it might be like a resource management game for investigation, and you're always assumed to get the basic amount of information to continue the story. So it's not like the mystery isn't going to dead end because you failed to roll. We want the story to continue, so we're just going to give it to you. But I think the more resources finite for the session you dump into investigating at certain points, the more information you get about specific clues. So it's not, will we get this information? It's what quality of information will we get at certain points? Because it's a mystery game and we want to get to the end. Mm-hmm. That's about pretty much all I've looked at for Gumshoe and Bubble Gumshoe. And I don't know exactly what they changed from Gumshoe to Bubble Gumshoe to make it more kid friendly or kid centric. Yeah, I have a copy of Blades in the Dark. I got the limited edition hardback with a really nice ribbon bookmarks. Mm-hmm. Want to play that? Haven't gotten a chance to. is very much not high school.
Yeah, right. And what's the system? That's like a thieves. That's like
it's its own system, again, kind of D6 dice pool system, which Trophy borrowed from a lot. And the setting is Industrial Revolution haunted city.
Oh, wow!
Like I'm pretty sure you're in an urban location, and it's just unnaturally dusk all the time because there was some kind of like ghost cataclysm. There's like printing presses and flintlocks and almost like electric rails, but I'm pretty sure it's all powered by ghosts.
Oh, nice. Yeah.
So it's a real interesting setting because it's not your classic standard medieval fantasy where there's vampires and ghosts and stuff going on, but it's very much, like Industrial Revolution, and you have machines which make, I think, really change the dynamic of at least the setting.
Cool. The thing I like about this collection is it's really diverse systems and settings. So you've got, from cyberpunk to investigation to, dark.
To kids that can't die, or kids on bikes, which I've heard of, but again, not looked at.
Tales from the Loop kind of keeps me from being that interested in kids on
bikes.
Yeah,
it was that too.
Yeah. Good. Yeah. So that's worth checking out. I mean, the price is going to keep going up. So depending on when this gets posted, it could be.
Going to get a massive spike from this podcast.
Yeah, right. Boom. Now it's $50. So I'll put a link to that in the description. And upcoming for us, so I completed the kind of unedited full scenes of the debriefing for the Alien RPG.
That thing looks amazing.
Oh, good.
It's long.
Yeah, it's very long. So it's like 100 minutes. Yeah, yeah. So that's going to
It's like an hour 40. Yeah, right, yeah.
So that's going to go behind the Patreon wall to give you incentive. And then there'll be a kind of a greatest hits. I'll do like an edited version that just gives you all the players kind of basic reactions to a lot of the main parts of the story.
So you're not going to cut Chris's thing at all? It was literally like 20 minutes.
Right. So I'll try to get it onto a more like YouTube friendly size. Yeah, that was fun to put together, and it was fun to hear everybody's reaction and kind of just be able to watch those in order.
Watching it, I was kind of surprised at out of the four players, there were kind of four very different opinions.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's funny. So at the same session, people took away very different things from what they were doing in the system, what their character was supposed to be doing. So I really think we might be onto something as far as doing sessions and then doing those kind of interview things, because that gives people a lot of insight into, kind of that reality show, the little room, the little question room.
So we have like the next ones are going to be like scripted. Unscripted, but not. So you're going to tell us what to say. So there's maximum drama in those little confessional booths.
I can't believe she rolled that. Yeah, right. that is a nice insight into what people get out of role-playing and what people want out of role-playing. Take a look at our Patreon if you're interested in watching that, and there'll be a more digested version of it online soon.
Dunked in xenomorph acid.
Yes, exactly. So where can people find you?
People can find me on Twitter, as always, at HiveMind, HYVEMYND. That's where I'm talking up those two vampire games that I made, Hunger and Thirst, where I actually got paper samples sent from Mojo Print to look at the quality of business card things.
Oh, nice.
Because I really want to get those printed up.
Yeah, excellent. Okay. Oh, I want to see those. Yeah, definitely. Yeah, those look great. I think you did a nice job.
Yeah. How about you?
Yeah, so I do a weekly live stream of my cartoon. So abusecartoons.com is the website, and then both on Twitch and YouTube are the live stream. So that's every Sunday night, North American time, kind of Monday afternoonish in Japan. You can follow that cartoon at Abuse Cartoons on Twitter, and then the archive is on GoComics. So it's syndicated on GoComics at gocomics.com/domesticabuse. And if you want to get in touch with Idle Red Hands, the Twitter is, of course, at Idle Red Hands. IdleRedHands.com is the website. And there's also Instagram and the YouTube channel. And then please take a look at our Patreon. We were starting to put some really exclusive videos up there. So it's kind of going to be the unedited, kind of long-form versions of things that don't work as well on YouTube, and that we want people that really enjoy the personalities and the podcast to enjoy and see how well they handle their alcohol. That's it for this week. We'll be back next week.
Later, mortals.
Bye.